creative writing, and scholarly knowledge production and culinary business. His work across three terrains, these terrains of productions addresses the complex connections among different experiences of marginalization, challenges capitalist relational practices, and imagines alternative possibilities of desire and resistance. Please welcome both.
I'm just going to sit right here. It feels a little bit weird. Let's see. In the odd angle, I'm just going to back up a little bit. Okay, so, So, I am approaching comics it's a new medium for me, and I jumped right into wanting to create a graphic memoir. And so I'd like to show you part of my graphic memoir in progress. It's called Memory of an Avalanche. So I'm gonna read you the blurb a little bit here. So Memory of an Avalanche, what does it mean for queer and gender non-conforming brown bodies to exist in a time and place circumscribed by globalization, intensified border control, and state-sanctioned colorblind politics of inclusion? Memory of an Avalanche is a graphic memoir tracing both immigration battle through neoliberal transgender visibility politics, the professionalization of immigrant rights movements, and queer color romances of futurity in the era of multicultural dystopia. Set in Los Angeles within a one-year span, from 2011 to 2012, the story follows Bo, a recently graduated international student, as he navigates the nonprofit industrial complex to secure a work visa, deals with ways of unaccountable queer and trans community violence, and begins to physically transition from female to male while losing legal status. Memory of an Avalanche is a work of queer memory that honors vulnerability as a source of power, resistance, and healing. So I'm gonna show you work in progress here. So the images I'm about to show you are part of working against the grain, interpersonally, institutionally, and intrapersonally. So I'm going to do readings of similar to the way Claire did her presentation. Let's see. So this first scene takes place exactly 1 year before the Defense of Marriage Act, or DOMA, was struck down in California, which prohibits same-sex couple from getting married. So this scene is when Bo and his partner were trying to pass as an opposite-sex couple in order to get married, which was the first step in the game for permanent residency. So it echoes Claire's narrative a little bit, talking about the marriage petition. So here we go. Okay. So the sequence is called Bisected. This one's got pretty good reviews. Haha, what? A red carpet deal? Here's American Dream for you, Bo. Yeah, right. American Dream, huh? Alrighty, lucky duckies. See you in a bit. It's okay, I'll do all the talking. Just keep your mouth shut, okay? How can I help you? We would like to get a marriage license, please. Okay, so that was the first sequence. The next one up is called Mirage, and it continues right after the first sequence. It's work in progress. All that just for a piece of paper. So y'all found a ceremony spot yet? Yep, a good one. Our friend JJ tapped into his divinity school network and hooked us up with someone to sign off the marriage license for free. So where exactly are we going? The valley. Others will meet us there. Where the heck did JJ send us to? And these flags are the bear flags, the rainbow flags, and the leather flags, so all kinds of queer flags. Bo! Bo, Tia! Hey! Yo, Bo! Hey! Gigi, baby! Yo, man, nice find. I feel bad you guys trekked all the way out here just to get roasted. Come on, Bo, we are here just to support you. and you need witnesses anyway. Yikes, I wish I wore something other than this stinky jersey. Thea, can I get into the fountain? No! Alright, let's get this over with. Excuse me. Are you here for the marriage license, marriage ceremony, dear? The sister of perpetual indulgence. Congratulations to you and me. Oh, okay. I don't understand why we couldn't just get that absurd contract signed and take off. Because nothing in life is free, boo. That's how you pay for it. Thea, can I have that tiramisu cake? Oh, fuck this mirage business. Except for these sweets, right, Bo? True that. Alright, that's the end of that sequence. This is the last one I'm showing you from Memory of an Avalanche. And it's called Farewell. This is the moment of crisis. Okay, wait from here. How are you feeling, Bo? Are you ready? Can you ever be ready for it? Oh man, my first shot was super nerve-wracking. That thick, long needle scared the crap out of me. I'm leaving, bye! Sorry, Bo. I didn't mean to scare ya. Just 2 seconds later. I'm such a sucker for doing this. I don't think you are. It's a tough decision. That's Bo's legal name mispronounced. I'm not going to say it out loud. Okay, let's go before I just repeat my name again. So are you ready for your first shot? Here are the side effects of testosterone you should know. Ooh. So some of the texts are emotional roller coaster, clitoris size will grow rapidly, increase libido, oilier and thicker skin, male pattern baldness, acne, heart disease, liver damage. All clear? What's this heaviness inside my heart? How's my life going to change? How's this going to complicate my situation? I don't even want this. Ready? Sure. Whoa. Is that it? Congratulations. From here on, you can administer shots on your own. The next month, we can bump you up to the normal male range. Actually, what if I want to stop? What? What if I want to discontinue tea? Then stop immediately, though it should be fine for a while, because Asian men don't grow that much hair anyway. Huh? Boo. Days later. Good grief. My body is breaking down. Is this what I really need? To be cornered in all directions. Changes, uncertainty, impossibility. Farewell. That's the end of the graphic memoir for now. Since we still have time, just want to show you some extras, some experimentations I have done with the project. I rerouted my project through graduate school, and that's where Gaia and I met, at the art school down the street. I'm not going to mention the name, but it's an MFA program. So as part of the course assignments, I was asked to experiment with different aspects of my work. and different techniques, which was really helpful for me as a new comics maker. So that's one of the previous pages you guys saw, and so it's digital coloring, which was really difficult because I'm a technophobe, as in one of my comics is talking about. I struggled, and I think I'm getting a hang of it. I'm not sure if I'm going to do all the rest of the comics in color, but it was really nice experimentation to get used to the techniques. And this is one of the pages, kind of standalone pages, the moment before Bo's visa ran out and before it became undocumented. So I was using ink wash for the water and experimenting with the panel layouts, and that was, I hoped for that to be the beginning of the graphic memoir of Koreatown. The story takes place in LA, and the three main characters live in Koreatown. And so was an environmental study of the scene. And that's one of the other sketches, point of entry. Hopefully I will get to work on that soon. I want it to be an introductory sequence, introducing the idea of intersectionality, which is different marginalized experiences that people that sometimes do intersect, that people have many different aspects of their identities that are not usually understood or represented. So I wanted to explore that idea. I wanted to show you my most current work right now. It's called Soft Skin, and it's specifically about vulnerability. The piece was commissioned by the GLBT Historical Society, and it's going to be shown at the museum in the Castro in October. So I can we do some announcements at the end where we get to tell you guys where our works are going to be next. And so this is the piece I developed for that. I just finished it last month. So I'm going to read to you the excerpt. Soft Skin explores softness as an articulation of strength and challenges the cis-heteropatriarchal notion of tough skin as a standard of survival. Inspired by the transmasculine experience of being off testosterone, the work traces the shifting contours of emotional and bodily landscape to explore various borders and boundaries that confine our existence. Soft Skin is a project of profound grief, vulnerability, and liberation, which is precisely what it means to become embodied. So the work is done in color pencils at the size of a tabloid page, so 11 by 17. So if you don't know, you can see from the back, so I'll just read it. It's been a couple years since my last tea shop, and my body has reverted back to the way it was before. It's a gift to fully embody feelings again. I haven't let oppression turn me into a stone. I'm often told that I'm too vulnerable. That's why others mess with me. I have a gentle heart, they say, but I lack tough skin. Skin is my body, my heart, my feelings. I'm allowed to grow and transform into myself. Vulnerability is my power. My feelings are rays of resilience. I don't let oppression mess with me. So that's the end of the piece. Do we have more time? I'm just going to keep showing you guys more stuff. What? 6 more minutes? Okay. And that's the piece that's on show right here, to the right. So just a little bit more context about the work. So Pixelated is a comic tracing the contours of gender racialization through the dreams of an Asian immigrant in the film. So the character references from the piece are from the comic called The Shadow Hero by Jean Yang and Sonny Liu. So here, Pixelated. Okay. Ever since I started passing as male, people have often remarked, "You must be good at computers. You must work in the tech industry. I'm sure coding is a piece of cake for you." But I wonder, as a bona fide technophobe, are these the compliments I actually deserve? There's a basic calculator right there. This is too complicated, I'll just do the math by hand. Sometimes I wish that technical aptitude were a side effect of testosterone, that this biochemical substance would turn me into, ta-da, a computer geek. You wish. There's Golden Man of Silicon Valley right there. Honestly, I can't stop fantasizing the idea of living up to the stereotype. Because in the current economic climate, it would have been nice to possess technical superpowers. So, colorist, salary $60,000. Now, show me what you've got. There's a little Cintiq spinning and head spinning. Love the geek squash. Geek squash. Not squash. Okay. Where would these superpowers take me? I have yet to know. I'll sure be digging gold in cyberspace. So long as my dream doesn't pixelate. Yo, wake up. Alright. Okay. I feel like we need some breathing room. Like I took you guys on an emotional roller coaster here. Because the next piece, I have one more piece to show. I know I have a lot of time left. So this is a digital comic piece. It's called Bo's Guide to How to Process Trauma. And I hope, let's see, it should be a link there. Is there a link? It's okay. Oh, it's okay. Anyways. Takes it to the website. Okay. All right. Okay, it's visible from that. So, since it's on my website, it's interactive. So I'm just gonna walk you guys through. Okay, Bo's Guide to How to Process Trauma. Depends on the browser. I think this time it doesn't want to replay. It's the uncertainties of technology. Is there a way to get off of the spinning side?
Is this my spot? I keep it.
Okay. If you guys are not busy. Okay.
Tell me. Yeah. Oh, you can just pass it around.
Just pass it around.
Okay, so speaking of years and years of hard work, How have your stories, narratives, and approaches changed and shift over time? And if you want to speak to, you know, political situations currently, I mean, as you know, it's been a lot of years since you started working, and that's from like maybe thinking about it in your head to actually putting it on paper or on a tablet. You know, so if you would, either of you want to answer that.
So I started out as I am a painter, and I mostly do like oil paintings and landscape paintings. So working on my graphic novel has been very challenging and very different mediums, which is also one of the reasons why I like it in color, because that kind of seeps in the painterly aspect of my work. The graphic novel is still in progress, but has undergone many phases of change. At the very beginning, I actually wanted to just do something shorter and more simple, just telling the story of the Umbrella Movement and my grandmother's story in a more concise way. But it was starting to take a long time, and as there was more distance between the event of the Umbrella Movement and my graphic novel still being incomplete, I started thinking about how to weave it into a story that people can follow and empathize with, and also how to convey all of this historical context, which probably most Americans are unaware of, in a way that does not overwhelm them and that can guide them through the history as well as bond with the characters and weave them through time, you know, current Hong Kong and, you know, China. So I've written and rewritten many drafts of the script of my graphic novel, and also started drawing because I've never done a graphic novel before, and so I wanted to see how it looks. But then after doing revisions, I had to scrap the drawings and start again. So that's been a lot of change.
So I think for me, it's been a long haul. I'm pretty much talking about Memory of an Avalanche, which is my main project. And I did experiment, I showed you guys with different techniques, and also storytelling and speaking of vulnerability and thinking of what is safety for me as a storyteller and doing a graphic memoir. That's supposedly a true story. And so this is my just kind of sidetrack a little bit, but I'm thinking of the idea of emotional truth and how my truth has changed since I started working on this project. And it's a way of establishing boundaries, and my boundaries have shifted since the beginning of this project or since the catastrophe happened. How can I narrate my story without it being, without feeling unsafe? And that's impossible because it's a risk to be in public. It's a risk to come out as trans. It's a risk to come out as an immigrant at this particular point in time. Just saying that you're not from here, you're at risk in some ways. So I'm thinking of how do I stay safe and also get support for my work. Every time I'm presenting work in a gallery, in the public, or asking for funding for my project, it's a huge risk. So I'm thinking of my approach has changed in storytelling. At first, I would say I would use the first person pronouns for my character Bo, but now I'm using the third person pronoun Bo the character, as very different from Bo the author or Bo a living person. And so that creates a good distance for me to be able to put my work away and go to sleep at night, or to, you know, something happens when I'm getting triggered through creating my narrative through drawing certain characters, then I can say this is work, this is separate from life that I'm living right now. So the transformation has been about distance that I'm creating, not that I'm lying more and more, but it's more of how do I articulate truth that's safer and safer for me. And that's That's never, it's always a work in progress. It's always messing up and always about, and also creating story, a story about multiple people in my life right now. And they could be like, oh, I disagree with what happened. I disagree, this might go into other questions, but like this is how do I continue to be in community with the people who help me survive.
I think the next one kind of speaks, is related to that, you know. What was one of the most difficult things that to write or draw about in your stories? I mean, you both wrote pretty difficult things, right? But, yeah, what was one of the most difficult things?
I was thinking about this question earlier, and I was like, in terms of writing, I think, as I've said before, being able to explain the political situation in Hong Kong in a way that, and China, in a way that is really easy for an audience to understand, was really hard for me because I didn't really come from a creative writing background, and so at first my approach was like, it was very dense, and then I took the approach of like, kind of with Marjane Stroppi's work, Persepolis, like using central characters myself as a way to tell the story. In terms of drawing my grandmother's story was really, really difficult because there's almost no photographic reference from the late 1950s in rural China. You know, any photos that you have are like military parades or Mao, you know, in important events, but you never see like the life of people in China at that time. So that was like almost all imagination, or from very little resources. So that was really difficult to draw.
Most difficult things are around the most vulnerable moments. And the sequence I showed you guys, Pharaoh, when the moment when Bo decided to take testosterone and not and feeling hesitant about it. So I think that was like dealing with different kinds, like multiple intersections of being marginalized at the same time, of the status running out, and needing to pass as male in order to be able to get legal status at the time. So it's a lot of like conflicting, life-changing moments unfolding at the worst time. So in my recollection of it, I think it took, if it's easier to go back to have like the visuals. Okay, sorry. Let's see, maybe it's just quit. It's okay. Yeah, I guess this part right here. That's the hardest image to draw. And so it's like a combination of the uncomfortable past, the present that's unresolved, and the uncertainty that is to come. And even though I have lived my life past that moment, it still feels uncertain every time I go back to revisit the moment of impossibility. Like, how can you be in multiple bodies at once, in multiple places? And I think it's a kind of an immigrant like struggle of not being in one place, always in between. And this is in between of the borders of gender, the borders, like national borders, and also like the borders of your heart, like where would you like to belong? And every time I get stuck with creating narrative, I come back to this image. And it keeps me alive, it keeps me grounded, it keeps me humble, and allows me to create more from this place of what am I gonna do with life?
Can you ask a question? Do you have any questions in your index cards? Please feel free to pass them.
or if you prefer to verbally ask questions, just raise your hands.
Folks who were doing index cards
passing out for writing questions.
And
you have any questions,
feel
free to,
yeah,
to raise your hand.
What would you suggest to an individual who has stories to share but fearful of rejection and vulnerability?
Rejection and vulnerability, it's the same place, comes from the same place. Rejection, and that's a life force. That was the reason why I created the soft skin piece. It's a dilemma. It's always something. It's like vulnerability creates good stories, and at the same time, it's the hardest story to tell. I started out with the process of me creating this piece right here. I go back and forth between words and images. So as a comic artist, the way I approach this particular piece about vulnerability has been going back between how do I want to talk about borders and rejection. And I went back, I was writing a poem, and I got stuck, and then I switched to drawing. I started on this page first, so blood cells, the idea of life within your body, something that you can't really define. And sometimes I think that's what vulnerability is. You can't really define, and it's hard to capture. So I thought of the smallest things in our bodies, and to go from there, to go from an image. And once I started to lay out the images, I worked in multiple drafts. So this is, I don't know how many times I have erased and redraw, or how many times I have sketched and then do multiple sketches to get the image I actually want to commit to. So through those rounds of edits, I took them as I saw them as movements, and they're all legit, and they're part of the larger picture. So I think that's how I deal with building up the courage to be vulnerable. I start in layers, because it's tackle your pain and rejection, that's hard. My body's not gonna do it. But if I started to invite it to flourish or to grow in the way it wants to. So it's giving my pain that agency to grow is something that a process that I would like to continue exploring, and would like to, invite folks who, if you are stuck generally with your creative process, this is how, start sketching, start going from if you're making comics, go from writing to drawing, or to just doing something that's not even comics, or even eat good food. And some things, ideas, associations start to come, and you start to open your process up to a more non-structured, the page. It has to be within the page.
Kind of just summarizing what both said, but I think starting is always the most daunting task whenever you start, either whether it's an art piece or an essay, and so just understanding that if you have something that you want to share, don't have the end result as your goal, but start just start step by step, and the process will unfold itself, and you'll eventually like find a way to tell the story of vulnerability, or you know, the story will find a way to tell itself as you're working on the work, and don't rush and give it the time that it needs and the revision that it needs.
One quick add-on is don't be afraid to be messy. That's how we grow.
And I want to add to it, just as someone who also creates, like I think you can also just make stuff and not have to share it. You don't even have to share it. You don't like it, toss it in your garbage if you want to. I mean, I wish you don't, but you know, save it, put it on the drawer, and then revisit it afterwards. And I think you're right. Like, the starting part is the hard part, because sometimes like some of this stuff is really emotional, very traumatic. Like okay, like it's like going to therapy, right? Like, do you want to go? You kind of want to go, but like you kind of don't want to go there, right? Because you know it's gonna bring up a lot of stuff for you, right? Especially if you talk about something that's very sensitive and vulnerable, right? Yeah, and actually the next question is kind of really similar. It's a little different, but similar. But like, how do you transform your values and emotions and personal experiences into art? And how do you get over that initial barrier? So Claire kind of spoke.
Yeah, and well, I also want to say, like, comics are a really good way to translate both emotional and, like, political and social issues into art because of the combination of words and visuals, where visuals alone can be very liberating, but can have its limitations in terms of, like, how deep you can go into an issue. So that's kind of the reason why I started working on the graphic novel, is that like I had stories to tell. I couldn't tell them through just painting, and starting to create the work was very difficult and went through a lot of revisions, but you know, and it's been about 2 years now that I've been working on the graphic novel, but when you have something down, then you can figure out what to change, how to improve it, and you go from there, step by step.
Yeah, and I also wanted to add that, like, your stories are, like, super unique. Like, you're the one who's, like, the best to tell those stories. Like, if you don't tell those stories, someone else will tell it for you, and that's not where you want to go, right? No one is telling stories about the umbrella movement as like that, like, especially not in comics form, right? Or telling a story, you know, that's, you know, at the intersection of migration and like gender and like all this like you're the best. You guys are the best one to tell the stories, right? If you don't tell your own story, no one should be telling your story for yourself, right? So there is that need and urgency as well that hopefully would make you want to. I want to share my story. So maybe we can open it up if you want to submit cards or okay. So. How has feeling vulnerable affected you, and how you felt spiritually, if at all?
Well, I don't know if I know how to answer that question, but actually when Bo was talking about his experiences, I felt also some other connections that I actually haven't shared yet, is that I'm actually also in a pretty vulnerable visa situation, where my temporary green card is about to expire in like 3 or 4 months. So I kind of like really get to that uncertainty and vulnerability. Can you repeat the question again?
How has feeling vulnerable affected you, affected how you felt spiritually, if at all?
I think what I'm not religious in any way, but the feeling of vulnerability and in general reflecting on society and everything that is around me has made me really want to take a more cosmic approach or a holistic approach to viewing everything that is around me. So I think a lot of current society, the way we view the world is we are very self-centered and we are very much, you know, viewing the world in our own way that the culture, our culture views it. And we don't really think outside of our own worldviews. And I think being in these like cross-cultural situations, immigrating, and also in political movements and organizing, I tend to think about everything as being connected, draw connections from different places and cultures, and also think about how just, you know, life forms in general are connected and affect each other. And that's sort of my guiding principle of life.
Yeah, and to build off of what Claire is saying, with creating connections, I think that that's what vulnerability has allowed me to do. And it was really meaningful that you share the connection you have with my work. And that's what I'm hoping that my work can do and be there for people. And to be in community. And that's what I think vulnerability allows me to do, is to be in community with people who may not share the exact experience, but have some intersections with it. And to even challenge someone to view things differently, like to understand gender in a different way. And wherever you are in your journey of understanding gender, I think that that's what the honesty of my piece allows that connection to happen. And to the interconnectedness of everything, I think that it gets lost in capitalism at this point. It gets lost in this political landscape that says, oh, this is what it's supposed to be like. You can't question the truth. And this, to be vulnerable is to question it, that is that true? Is that true for me? Is that helpful? To even just question that, is this good for me? That's a big question that I think one's, like, spiritually what being vulnerable allows me to do.
So we have a couple minutes left. Folks want to ask the final question that we can.
Yeah, thank you for sharing your work and your vulnerabilities with us. And I wanted to ask about how you and y'all found each other as artists, as friends, as community, and how did y'all come to decide to make this happen, making sure you work together, and finding that theme of resistance and vulnerability throughout your works, which are different in its own ways. Yeah, how did this all come together?
Well, okay, so both shared that we found each other in grad school. And then for me, it's just like, I want to make comics. I don't necessarily want to pay a gazillion amount of money to go to grad school, but I do want to be in community with other cartoonists and other artists so that I can get feedback and I can get the support and help that I need. And also, like, and the struggle, right? Because it's hard work. It's like years and years of, like, drawing this stuff and not getting paid to do it, right? So, yeah, so getting that support and the initial aid, right? So that was what I was looking for when I signed up to pay a gazillion amount of money to go to grad school. But that's how I found Bo, and then we kept in touch and we continue to support each other. And I think it's important for artists to support each other and to showcase our work, because, you know, capitalism says you have to compete with each other for the grant, for that grant, or for whatever, right? So it's important to kind of reject that and be like, well, actually, we can all thrive, right? We can all help each other. And same with actually Claire. Claire found me on Facebook.
You found me because I had organized a 1-year anniversary exhibition of the Umbrella Movement in Chinatown in San Francisco, and then and then I came to her show here about a year and a half ago, actually at Oak Gallery, and that's how we connected.
Yeah, I was definitely trying to seek out artists who are doing similar work and really good work, and I'm glad I found you guys. We have one last question before we
Since I know a little bit more about Claire's work, so maybe a question. Okay, maybe also apply to both too. So I think he is kind of, you think the comic is good for storytelling and then the oil painting is not. I kind of a little bit thinking is that probably for the whole story, right, from the beginning to end, the comic is perfectly needed, right, to tell a lot of content there. But if one is still some significant moment, since I think for the long term, people in mind, they would not remember the story, they remember the scene, the significant moment. So I think if it can distill some different scene, maybe make people memorable in the movement or whatever your grandma's journey, and then it can transform to an oil painting. Oil painting, I think for one, the form factor is much bigger, so I think the impact is will be better. So I'm not sure you would consider that.
Well, thank you for mentioning that, for suggesting that. I do agree that standalone work like the oil painting has very different impacts and can, in some ways, have like a stronger visual impact, on the wall. But it, as you saw in both work too, actually, that you are exhibiting at the LGBT Museum, some of Bo's work is very much kind of like a standalone piece of work, and those I think are very good at conveying certain emotions and certain ideas, but they tend to usually be a little bit more abstract. So I do agree that certain emotions or situations can be distilled in a one image format. I will say the other thing that I've kind of started liking about a graphic novel or comic is the accessibility issue, because a physical painting, only people who are physically in front of the painting can access that work. And so, if it's a gallery or if it's in somebody's home, they can access it. But with a comic, something printed, you can, everybody, or you can access it a lot more. A lot of people have the opportunity to access that work, which is very nice. And thinking about like also the equity part of it, it's something that you don't need a lot of money to buy a graphic novel, but you'll probably need a lot more money to buy a painting.
I think that it does, to add on to what you were saying, that the comics is like the work, their frames or their panels. So I think of the idea of time. Time does help you consume the narrative differently. And to maybe you spend less time in one, on one page, in one physical painting. Maybe that's not always true. Like, you can spend a lot of time on one page, but then there's the idea of sequence. And so what drew me to the comics form is the idea of it's more a structured reading of certain narratives, but you can also go back or you can read things in different orders. So it's the idea of paintings in many different orders that I think that it's, especially my piece, Soft Skin, does the kind of painterly color pencil piece is more like I could swap, put things in different orders and they read differently. So I think I also like that can be like as they can stand alone and have like their own value. I think that comics is more you're forging people to read your narrative in a certain way, or there are possibilities that emerge between like different frames being next to each other. I'm not sure if that's kind of I'm answering the question. It's kind of going off of what Claire is saying, that there is the idea of like a more extended time, extended narrative.
So that brings the end of the panel. So if there's any closing words of wisdom or just announcements.
So I guess my graphic novel is still in progress. I'm hoping to finish it this academic year I've been teaching. But if you want to like kind of get updates for when I finally finish it, you can leave your contact information on that table with the greenish tablecloth.
Yeah, I was just going to mention that we have our mailing list that we, if you would like to be kept posted of where we're going to be next, what our upcoming projects will be like, then I would encourage you to sign up for our email list. Or if you have already signed up for the mailing list outside, I think there was a box that you could check if you wanted to be on our individual mailing list as well, so to stay in touch. And that way I could send you more information about the upcoming exhibits I'll be part of, or Claire will keep you posted about her work in progress. And yeah, so feel free to help yourself. I brought some comics to sell in the table in the back, and feel free to have more food.
Yes, and also Bo graciously bought snacks for us, so if you want to ship in a buck or so, feel free to do that so we can reimburse them.
We have the donation.
Donation.
Coffee mug right
coffee
there.
Mug.
Right there. So it's antique.
Yes. So yeah, feel free to chat, meet the artists, get some comics, donate money, get some snacks.
Yeah. Check out the exhibit.
Yes. Check out the show.